Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Tony and Melissa in the morning right now on WICC 600.
Okay, we welcome State Senator Tony Wong to our airwaves. How are you this morning, Senator?
I am good. Always great to be on with you both.
Okay, we look forward to it each and every Monday. Let's start with the budget, if you don't mind. The governor said we are seeing more than $900 million in a deficit, and we are going to need to basically drain the rainy day fund to start recovering. What does that mean for tolls or transportation needs here in this state?
Well, first, this is a coronavirus-induced recession, and it would rip an unprecedented nearly $7 billion, with a B, from Connecticut's coffers by the year 2023. And this is from a independent, objective fiscal analysis. And what's fascinating is the fact the numbers are stunning, Tony and Melissa. You're talking about for the period ending July 1st this year, we are nearly $934 million in a deficit, and we need to find a hole, which is where you raised the issue of the rainy day fund. But what's even more stunning is for the upcoming year, for the 2020 to 21 July 1st, we're $2.3 billion in an estimated deficit. That's out of a $20 billion budget. And then for the preceding next 2 years, you're looking at $2 billion plus. And these are numbers based upon projections. They're not real yet until we get literally August, September numbers that really show the full picture of the dynamics. So absolutely, these numbers are stunning. And you know, we've heard about the crisis with small business owners and the PPP programs and the unemployment and how it's devastating people. Well, it's going to translate to income tax revenue and the very little spending of sales tax revenue. The state of Connecticut is in a deep hurt in regards to the loss. I mean, nearly $7 billion for the next 3 years. Everything's got to be on the table.
Right. And, you know, but when we're talking about, you know, transportation, I guess the big thing that kind of struck me, Senator Wong, is the fact that Republicans were kind of relying on the rainy day fund to be one of the answers to avoid tolls. And I know we haven't really focused on them because of the pandemic. But are there, I don't want to say tricks up your sleeve, but it seemed like in our newscast, when we pulled up the questions from John Craven from News 12, it seemed like he was trying to get to, you know, what are the other alternatives? If tolls aren't it, the rainy day fund's not it, what other options are there? Because it seemed like we kept going back to the drawing board time and time again, and we kept coming down to the two sides, tolls or let's tap into the rainy day fund.
You know, what's remarkable is in February this year, the governor gave a presentation in regards to his proposed budget for this upcoming, and he was very rosy in the projections, talking about what we had, and the world afterwards completely different. And when I said that everything has to be on the table, indeed, we have to re-explore everything. A new dynamic has occurred. And in addition to that, it's not only the transportation fund, it's all of our various services, critical needs for those in the safety net, as well as the real rapid depletion of our unemployment insurance funds by the dramatic needs. But the other part is, you know, we also have to explore the possibility of a schedule pay increase that is on a 10-year labor agreement with state employees that literally will give another $350 million additional dollars out of the state coffers to pay for contractually mandated increases. The governor was asked about that equally, and he mummed and said, I'll get back to you. So literally, in regards to tolls, in regards to gasoline tax, in regards to mitigating cuts that we need to undertake, it is absolutely critical that everything, and it is responsibly for us as legislators to go to the table and say everything has to be on the table. But as I said before, when we looked at this about 7 weeks ago, I said this will force us to make difficult decisions and lay a better foundation, I hope, moving into forward. But to answer the question, everything has to be on the table. Include everybody stepping up, includes our unions, includes our businesses, and all the various entities. We all have to get involved in this. We're all in this together, and everybody has to take the shared sacrifice. So nothing can be excluded.
We're here with State Senator Tony Wong, our regular Monday morning visit. Senator, the governor also signed a new executive order late Friday, changing the voting for municipalities and their budgets. Now, what does this mean for residents, and are they left out of the mix to help decide on town budgets?
Well, it fits parallel with what we're talking about in regards to the governor for the state budget, the fact that he needs to have the legislative body come in, interact with him, counsel, give feedback from the ground floor, Main Street, to make these kind of decisions as it relates to the incredible deficit that we're experiencing in the state. But his executive order, pretty much because of the pandemic and the inability for various forms of representative government to get out and vote, has created some degree of confusion. In fact, he is now up to Executive Order 7HH. That's 35 executive orders. And maybe perhaps about a week and a half ago, he issued under Executive Order 7I, Section 13, which said that municipal budgets can be extended into May, but also that for safety of people, that the various governances can decide on budgets without public input or vote. He preferred to get some feedback via video or conferencing, but the ultimate executive order in 7I said that you can decide a budget without public votes. Now, that creates a confusion because in Connecticut, we have various forms of town governance on budgets. For example, Bridgeport has a mayor. He or she decides on that and presents it to the RTM, and they make a vote on that. You don't have a board of finance. You don't have a board of education that kind of determines it. So that is a system that's unaffected by this executive order because those governing bodies can vote by conference call or Zoom. Now you have towns like Fairfield, Greenwich, and Darien that has a representative town governance with a first selectman and a equally important role of Board of Finance that determines these budgetary considerations. They all have equal responsibilities in that. For example, the RTN has to approve the budget, which then sets the mill rate, which is the taxation rate. That can't be erased. So there was some tremendous confusion. Now, the latest FAQ from the governor's office as of May 3rd, 6 p.m., clarified that these kind of representative town meetings can meet, can have a vote to determine the final budget process. But it is up to the towns to kind of make that determination, up to the each respective bodies. So in Greenwich and in Darien and in Fairfield, the RTM moderators can collaborate. The Board of Finance chairs can collaborate and work with the Selectman's office to make the determination. But they can cast a vote. What's really tricky and confusing is, you know, for example, in Newtown and in Monroe, the budget gets crafted by the First Selectman's office, and it is up for a public referendum vote. That is where the problem is, and that is where the executive order has superseded that and said, once the First Selectman's office has made that budgetary determination, that becomes the budget. And the public, because of the safety of them being able to vote, is not going to be able to do it this year. Now, that raises a concern for very small towns that have these public referendums that, you know, you put in budgets with these very uncertain numbers and a what-if scenario, and once it gets passed, it's imposed in a tax burden and all the responsibilities of that budget onto the townspeople without a vote on that. So that is where the uproar and the confusion occurred. But nevertheless, for these small towns like Newtown, Monroe, and even for Easton that has a town meeting, literally everyone in the town can go into one meeting and vote on that budget. Those would be superseded by this Executive Order 7HH. It's very confusing, but nevertheless, it really is an important factor, just as we relate to the state budget. You need to have legislative input, at least from the standpoint of representing the interests of the people. And you can't have a government that's determined by fiat or by emergency actions to decide its impact on everybody else. That's the real tricky parliamentary as well as due process in letting people know that these budgets and the taxes that's going to be imposed on them, they need to have a say in this.
Tony, we've run out of time.
Did I confuse everybody?
No.
It's a lot to process. No, it's a lot to process.
It really, really is. Yeah, absolutely. But, Senator, we have run out of time. So I know you can go on about this subject probably for the next couple of hours, but we just don't have the time. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes.
I really appreciate it. And it's an opportunity that I try to simplify as best I could. But the bottom line is we are in a deficit crater, and these kind of policies cannot be made from a single office. It really has to incorporate people's opinions and ideas and how it's going to impact their lives. And literally, it is responsible for us as legislators and lead by saying everything's got to be on the table.
All right. Sounds good. Senator Tony Wong, thank you so very, very much. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you. Be safe.
All right.
Be healthy. Bye-bye.
You got it. Bye-bye. Brenda Kupchick, she's from Fairfield. And Brenda, it's a pleasure to have you here today. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
Now, we spoke with you on Friday to talk about beaches and parks reopening. After this weekend, and it was a gorgeous weekend, nobody wanted to stay home. How did the town do?
We did great.
Really?
Actually, yes. I'm really impressed.
Yay. Tell us.
So I actually visited our spaces throughout the weekend and was in constant contact with our law enforcement at both locations, which we believe were the busiest. And it was great. I visited Jennings Beach and Penfield Beach along with I was there with the law enforcement who was there all throughout the weekend. And people were great. We had restricted parking at Jennings, and it was never really crowded. It was never full exactly, and the beach was, people were enjoying it. They were socially distancing. Obviously, there were a few cases here and there where the police just had to politely remind people, which I'm glad that they were there to do that. And I would say I maybe received about a dozen emails or Facebook messages about people concerned about people being too close or not having a mask on. But other than that, both spaces, Lake Mohegan and the beaches, were great. Residents really enjoyed this lovely weekend, getting to spend time at our open spaces. So the planning that went into it, I think, is attributing to how well it went this weekend.
Yeah, I know. And something that we had brought up that I was really worried about, just because I've grown up in Fairfield, very familiar, obviously, with it. My parents are still there. And the neighboring, that neighborhood that's, you know, right on Penfield and Jennings Beach, right in there, that's usually always, you know, slammed during the summertime. Right. They did okay.
They did. Wow. We still have about approximately 50 Fairfield University students who are still just like packing up and leaving from their rental from this prior year. So they were still there, but the police were there. They were patrolling regularly, making sure everyone was following the rules, and we didn't have any incidents, serious incidents. So I was pleased, and I got so many emails and messages from our residents thanking the town for having the opportunity to be back on the beach and to walk the trails at Lake Mohegan. So it was really great. Good.
What about the golf courses, Brenda? How did they do? Did they open up, in fact?
Yes. So we this is all part of our emergency management planning. So many people don't understand all the work that goes into emergency management operations. I didn't before I took on this job, and it's a tremendous amount. And it's including, you know, the health director and the DPW director, our director of emergency management, who's our fire chief, Dennis McCarthy. Law enforcement and first responders do a tremendous amount of planning and effort and work. And so we planned for all of this stuff. So our private courses in town stepped up to stand with the town over a month ago and closed voluntarily to sort of be in sync with Fairfield. And there are policies that we put into place. They reopened last Saturday. Our par 3 course was open this weekend, and our other public course, which is under renovation, hopefully will be open the middle of this month, because we we need to pave the parking lot there. And there's some just delays with the contractors because of the COVID issue.
We're speaking right now with First Selectwoman Brenda Kupchick out of Fairfield. Brenda, what do you think made the difference? Because, you know, we've mentioned this before. Fairfield was one of the first, if not the first community in Connecticut to make the call to shut everything down, essentially. Playgrounds, parks, beaches, golf courses. And, you know, in I think we were a little obviously on the worried side of, you know, is everyone going to kind of go plum loco? We're finally seeing a really nice weekend. We're finally opening things back up. And, you know, what's going to happen? And, you know, to hear that you've only had a case here, a case there, some reminders here, some reminders there. That is polar opposite of where things were over a month ago. What do you think made the difference?
I think, again, the planning and the communication. So I've worked really hard to communicate to our residents through the newsletter that goes out to quite a few residents. I would say a huge amount are signed up for it. And then we just also post those newsletters on our social media, and we have done a lot of press conferences with the emergency management team, talking to the residents of Fairfield about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how we're going to plan and open. So I think, for the most part, people knew what we were doing, and they felt communicated with, and they understood. So, and I want to say our residents, you know, they wanted to enjoy the spaces. You saw a little shaming on social media where, you know, a resident would say, you know, we're all following the rules. No, don't anyone mess it up for the rest of
right?
us. So, you know, everybody was kind of in this together mentality, and it makes me proud of the town.
Yeah.
And our emergency management team, and they did a tremendous amount of work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we so appreciate, I know that, like I said, it was a quick turnaround for you to come on a few days later, but we appreciate the update. And actually, at 9:30 every Monday morning, we have Lieutenant Jim Perez join us from the Fairfield Police Department. So we were going to get his take, see what he thought about it. So we are anxious to hear that as well. But we appreciate it so much. First Selectwoman Brenda Kupchick out of Fairfield. And I'm so glad things went well. Really, I was crossing my fingers on that.
I was too. I was holding my breath all weekend. So that's why I spent a lot of time at the spaces, checking in with our police department. And they were very pleased to be able to be there and help make sure everything was running properly and that our residents could enjoy our spaces. So I am just as happy as that you are.
With us here this morning is a fellow by the name of John Rexrode, and he's with us. He's got a very, very interesting story, a very, very interesting thing going on in his life. How you doing today, John?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing okay. Now, you are the CEO of a Connecticut company that's turned things around because of the pandemic. First, tell us about your company, and correct me if I'm wrong, you've been around for 2 decades now, right?
Well, I've been around for going on 30 years now. I do netting systems, so likely everybody has seen my netting in one way or the other, whether they go into New York and see them on the high-rise buildings. We protect buildings around the country. We do NASA and amusement parks, so if they go to amusement parks, they've seen our products there.
That's really, really cool. I love that. So can you tell us how the pandemic impacted you and your staff specifically?
Well, because we do construction and amusement, we had a lot of projects that were shut down, but we also had projects that were necessary projects to keep going. We're doing FedEx. We're doing some stuff for NASA right now and other projects that we need to keep moving with our safety programs. Obviously, amusement is shut down for the most part, even the large theme parks, but we continue to work with them on reopening and systems in place for that. I furloughed a lot of employees, like a lot of other companies, and started Masks for Citizens with really the goal to bring people back to work. And so far, we've brought everybody back, plus we've really tripled our staff making masks.
Wow. So when you say, so Masks for Citizens, how long has that been around? That's a new like program that you guys put into place. How long have you been doing that?
Well, I started pushing it about 5 or 6 weeks ago, actually, and I received little response. They were still saying masks don't work, starting to talk about facial coverings, and I ended up donating thousands of masks, unfortunately out of state where the interest was shown, and so I started out donating. But I was aware of the fact because my wife has received my kidney as a transplant, so she's on immune suppression medication, and also I'm involved with ASTM and other standard bodies, so I knew the discussion was masks and facial coverings.
Mm. So yep. I was going to say that directly is something you're connected to because of your wife. I didn't realize that.
Yes. So I'm actually the mask I make. I called Hartford Hospital Transplant Center, and I asked the team, what should I be doing during this, whether I should be staying at home or whether I could be coming to work and running my business. And they said, wash your hands, wear masks, and the basic guidelines of the CDC. And the mask that my wife and I would normally wear during flu or any other time where we could be exposed to anything is really a disposable mask, but they're not available. So I'm making a 3-ply cotton mask that's actually an improvement on that, and it can be worn really 3 or 4 different ways.
How do you retool a company like you have? I mean, it just seems to me that with the pandemic, you really stopped short, you know, kind of skidded. And, you know, within weeks, you reinvented yourself. How do you retool a company like that?
Well, I don't know if you'd call it retool or reinvent. It really created a new model within the company. We had sewing machines. I had several machines I could throw at it, which is what I did at first. Within the first week, when the Hartford Courant ran an article about it, we received a flood of orders, far more orders than we expected, and really the quantities were a lot higher, and we had businesses coming that we needed to reopen. So right away, within the first 2 days of that, I added 24 new machines and put people online, and we have an assembly line method that we're running here, and we already had cleanliness and other protocols in place. So we put in a unit within the company that's scalable, so I can literally be producing 100,000 masks a week if I need to.
Wow. I mean, so with this, though, I mean, I understand kind of reinventing, like you said, but, you know, you did mention earlier in this interview, John, that you had to bring on new staff just because the demand was so high, which is amazing. Like you said, there are so many people who have been put on furlough. So the fact that you were able to turn around, bring your staff back and even up it is incredible. But there wasn't any training or anything involved. Like they just, you know, I mean, I know that you have to be pretty smart to work for your company. But I mean, this to me is kind of like you're going to work and you're doing something totally different than you were doing before.
Well, in a way, I'm not. I've had to scale up before. About a year and a half, 2 years ago, I did a large job for Walmart where we produced all the netting used in all of their stores and all of the Sam's Clubs. And it had a 3-month turnaround. So when you're producing product for 8,000 stores in mass quantity that needs to be going out fast, I did the same thing there where I retooled my company and I produced product to fill that. With that, I had a pool of labor that I could bring in that was already trained, and that's a expandable pool of labor. Right now I'm running one shift, but I can easily run 3 shifts as I did with Walmart. So everything's very scalable, and I have the staff and the personnel that are available for me to use.
How many masks are you making a day?
We're putting out somewhere probably around 25,000 masks a week.
Wow. That's amazing.
That is. That really is amazing. And I would assume you're getting orders from all over the country.
Well, we're starting to. I mean, the first press came out in Connecticut. It was a little frustrating. I mean, you talk about retooling a company. Well, you have to sort of also retool how you're reaching people. Mm-hmm. I was really receiving little support. Everybody was saying hospitals, hospitals, hospitals. And I think that's great, but part of the problem that hospitals were experiencing was people taking and using the disposable masks that they so desperately need. So I wanted to flatten the curve by making something that was washable, reusable, and cost affordable to the public. I mean, I'm selling these for $7 a mask, and then we're also donating masks. So we've produce something that's affordable to the family, but I had to reach out to a publicist firm and say, I need your help, please, on how to spread word that that I'm here and that we can do this. And it's all about the public. It's all about my employees.
Absolutely. And you've done a great job with that. John, how can people get some of these supplies that you're putting together? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, they can go on this website, which is masks with an S for the word F-O-R, citizens with an S, or they're more than welcome to reach out to me on the phone. My business number is 860-526-8004, or they can email me, and my email is quite easy. It's just jr@netting.com, and we're not only taking orders through the website, but I do have people call. I have had people come and pick up masks. And I'm happy to walk people through that. Also, if there are people in need that are having financial problems, I'm thrilled when they call me. very respectfully. I gift a mask to them so that they have the safety that they need. I don't want them to be worrying during this time.
I'll tell you, John, you have turned a negative into a positive. Mm-hmm. An amazing story this morning. It really, really is. Is there a place people can go to read about what you've done and how you're doing it?
Well, on the Mask for Citizens website, there are videos up that explain the general program. Like I said, there were articles that ran in the Hartford Courant. I believe it ran in the New Haven Register. I'm sure those are available online. And they're more than welcome to call me. I talk to everybody personally. I do have a staff, so sometimes they might end up with my staff. But if anybody has a question and they want to talk to me, I'm available. I don't think a business person should be unavailable to their customer or to the public ever. And that's always a philosophy I've carried.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, we will also add this to our podcast, John. So we'll have it on our website as well and on our social media. So if people miss this interview with you, they could check it out there.
Well, I want to also just add that you guys are the heroes. You're the ones that are getting these messages out. You're the ones that are there for all of us to be able to stay calm as we're listening to your program. And I want to thank you for that.
All right, Johnny. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for what you're doing. Please give our regards to your wife. I hope she's feeling better. I hope you're feeling better.
Oh, we're both doing great. Thank you very much.
That's